Hi, I'm Graham Elwood from Comedy Film Nerds. I'm giving you two kitten hands up for Story Worthy Podcast.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Bob Hope Hollywood USO, located at LAX, LA International Airport.
Okay, what does that mean, the USO?
The USO is United Service Organization. They put on the entertainment shows for the troops anywhere and everywhere, including in the United States. They have these USOs all over the country. And it may not be a show there, but you can go there, you get some coffee and some donuts and some condoms, and then you go out to Sunset Boulevard, and you fought for our freedom, and now you can have sex with a prostitute.
Okay. The reason why you're talking about this is because our guest tonight, comedian Graham Elwood, he has toured extensively around the world, actually, doing his comedy, and he's also done a lot of these USO tours. That's what
right,
you're talking
exactly.
About.
Now, he was not at LAX. He probably started there.
Right.
He was, like, in Iraq and World War II Germany. They have a time machine, apparently, so you could go back.
Well, the topic tonight is on the war front, and that's the thing. So he goes into these, you know, places that are war-torn, and he tries to make these people laugh. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, they would either be... We can perhaps ask him later. They would either be the worst or best audience in the world.
Well, I could see a lot of them just maybe gazing out into the abyss, you know, like, what are you doing up there, funny boy? I just blew a guy's arm off or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But like, on the other hand, but maybe you're just, but they could also be really grateful you're there. Like, oh, thank God somebody's trying to entertain me because I just blew a guy's arm off. So we'll have to find out which way it goes.
If they're required to be there, like in other words, if it's a mandatory thing, like you got to go and sit in this chair and watch this guy make you laugh for an hour. You know what I mean? Like, is it a rule? Do they have to go or do they want to go to the show?
I think we both know that when comedy, the rule may be that you have to be there, but the rule is never you have to laugh. No one's ever been able to order anyone to laugh.
God, honest, that strikes deep.
That's grim. I know.
That is grim indeed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, not that this qualifies as a war story, but it was pretty bad comedy-wise. Years ago in Milwaukee, outside Milwaukee in some suburb, I was part of the, what is that thing they do, I guess, after prom? Where they have activities all night long in the high school.
Right.
So people don't go on and get drunk
the
and pregnant
party.
And
right.
dead.
Right.
But this was mandatory. So you could not leave the high school unless you were going home with your parents or something.
Right.
This was, and so 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the cafe gymatorium. These kids are like, you know, like they just want to be drinking and fucking and driving. They couldn't text then, but they wanted to write on tablets, perhaps, with ink.
And then what?
And then I go up and I'm like, hey, don't you think? Hi, I'm a 29-year-old guy from Milwaukee, and you're a 16-year-old person from outside Milwaukee who actually thinks Milwaukee is some sort of Vegas. And you think I'm an idiot.
How about that cafeteria food?
Yeah, I'm like, boy, I tell you, what is it when you're trying to drive on the I-94 and you get to the Stadium Exchange? Why is that always so hard? And they're looking at me like, you fucking moron. We don't care about them. That was pretty bad. That was an example of a forced audience that just was like...
Well, now, if you want to bring up forced audiences, you know, I used to teach traffic school.
Yeah.
Now, that is your audience that they have to be there
by
law. By
the way, do you know how many people... that I've like given cards to about Storyworthy, and they never come to the show, but they say, didn't she teach traffic school? Apparently everybody went through your fucking classes.
Goddamn, that's tragic. No, I did do that. That was a long time ago, man. 1998, 1999. And I used to... bring up comedians all the time. I brought up you. I bring up like Jackie Cation, all these different
comics. Your ex-husband.
Would come. Yep. Jonathan Gottsick, Bobby Lee. These guys would come and do my traffic school. I would always have people come at noon.
And they always
had a half hour of time. And so if you can make
these
guys
And those people had
laugh,
a look on their face like... At least I'm not listening to Christine talk about stop signs.
No.
They weren't that happy to see us, but they were happy they weren't learning about traffic.
I know, but see, after lunch is when the real fun started, because I would say, do you guys want to learn about red light cameras, or do you want to talk about me? And then I would practice my one-woman show, including I had this little tape player, and I'd put on music, or it was a CD player. I'd start the music. I would do, like, a tight 55 minutes. Then I would hand out, like...
Which always was always the story of you getting cancer, so...
Yeah, I was always, that's uplifting. And I would hand out these forms where they would check a box. Did you like the Peace Corps story? Did you like the cancer story? Did you like the boyfriend story? And then that, and then if they did all that, I would try to let them out, you know, a half hour early. If, you know, but it was hard because if I got caught leaving people out early, I would get fired.
Right.
God
those
damn
people,
it.
They immediately started drinking in their cars and drove right
Talk
into trees after those.
About a captive audience, I'll say.
Oh, God.
All right, so
we've actually turned into torturers, is what you're saying. Is our stories turned out to be, we're like one step behind waterboarding.
Yeah.
Making people listen to stories about cancer and traffic.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they would rather hear me, though, like you said, though, than to talk about more traffic stuff, because it really gets redundant after 7-8 hours, and then I'd have to do like 45 minutes on road rage. And then I'd have to do, you know, a half an hour on the rolling stop sign. I mean, it was insane.
I seem to remember you telling me that there was some black girl in your class, and she introduced you to the phrase, flip a bitch for a U-turn, and you laughed for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's probably right. I did enjoy the people. I enjoyed the people in my classes. Bunch of violators.
One of, among sentences Hannes Phineas never said, I did enjoy the people.
No. All right, you guys, we have a real comedian here, so let's bring him up. I mean, I think that's probably the idea here.
Yeah, right? What the hell? Let's bring him up.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, stay tuned because Graham Elwood is on his way here.
Hi, this is Dana Gould, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Storyworthy tweets. So join us on Twitter and be our friend on Facebook.
And we're back. We have left the Bob Hope Hollywood USO here at LAX. And gone into the Encounters restaurant. Now, if you've ever watched a television show from the 70s, 80s, or 90s, where there's a shot of LAX, they zoom into this weird sort of science fiction-y saucer-looking building in the middle. That's where we are.
And that does not go around, by the way. You would think,
it does not,
of course
yes.
It's going to turn. Of course it's
going to
turn.
Yeah, it's a big circular restaurant in the middle of an airport. You think it would spin around.
Well,
no.
I would like to see that. I mean, what's the Space Needle if it wasn't turning? You know what I'm saying? Let's get some revolving action. I don't think I'm asking for too much. All right, you guys, Graham Elwood is here. He is a very busy comedian, and he tours, like I said, extensively. Now, some of Graham's TV appearances include The Late Late Show on CBS, the Sarah Silverman Program, and the movie Super Jaime. Graham is also the co-creator and the host of the comedy Film Nerds, which, of course, is available on iTunes. You can find Graham Elwood at grahamelwood.com, and also you can find him on Twitter, and that seems to be the more popular way to go. Am I right?
Sure. For everybody but me, Twitter is a very popular thing.
You can find him at Graham Elwood. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Graham Elwood.
Yeah! I recently ate at the Encounter restaurant because I had a crazy layover. I was on the East Coast and was coming through L.A. and had to then go do a gig in Boise, and I had no time to go home. And I was like, I've been flying out of this airport for 15 years. I want to check it out. I went in there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've actually gone there just to eat at that restaurant and then left, having no business, other business at LAX, because I'm crazy.
I would never do that.
Well, I'm crazy.
But it was cool. I mean, it's very much a spaceship-y.
Did you want it to go around?
Yes, it should go around. But the elevator, when you get in, it goes boom, bam, 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 whoop, whoop, whoop. Like, it makes all this crazy music. So that was exciting. It was like the Jetsons. And I have done comedy for an after prom at 3 a.m.
Nice.
And I did it with Paul Goebel and Jim Bruce in Chicago. And I was about 22, 23. So I kept asking, hey, how many girls here are 18?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny how when, you know, when 50-year-olds are hiring people to entertain 16-year-olds, they think 22 is close enough.
Yeah.
They don't realize that a giant leap has been made.
It's huge.
And what you're interested in, they're not interested in, and what they're interested in, you're not interested in.
Yeah.
Except, of course, for the just legal vagina.
Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How many girls are 18?
Anyhow,
how many girls
are 18? But we should get to your story. We can discuss, you know, a possible rape charges toward you later in the show.
Sweet. Greatest intro I've ever had, I think, is what you just gave me there. All right. So I will tell my story of the last time I performed in Iraq, which was January 2011. I was on my third tour to Iraq with Scott Kennedy. And the reason I bring Scott Kennedy up, two reasons. One, he went over there over 50 times, and he recently passed away. And I just want people to know who he was. He was a great guy. And he put this tour together to Iraq. So it was our third time together. We were doing a bunch of bases in the South. So this is January 2011. It's the last year we're in the middle of the drawdown. So there aren't as many bases as when we, because when the first two tours I did with him, we did about three or four shows a day. Because he was all about going to the small bases. Scott was like, I want the people at the small bases to get the shows. That's what his whole thing was about. So we were in this base in, well, first I'll tell you this story. We did a base in 2008 in the Anbar province. It was about 100 Marines, and we had just done a show in front of 35, 40 Marines, and it was our first show of the day. That was when we were doing three shows a day. And this unit of Marines came in to reorganize. It was like the workout room, and they would just set up tables and tables and stuff, and you had to do shows. And to answer your question, they're the most appreciative audiences on the face of the earth. They're going there. They don't have to be there if, you know. So the thing is, though, you better be funny, because they're like, you're cutting into my sleep, and that is a commodity over there. So we had just done a show in front of these 35, 40 Marines. And so these guys are, we're talking to the Marines, and these guys come in and they're organizing the room. And this kid who's like 20, 21, 22, giant muscular Marine, huge guy. And he's all pissed off, moving the chairs. Man, we didn't get to go to the comedy show. We had to do guard duty. This is bullshit. And I'm like, you guys didn't get to go to the show? He goes, yeah, we didn't. And now we got to take you guys to the LZ, which is the landing zone, which in this base was outside the wire, which means it's technically in enemy territory. So he's all mad. So I pull Scott Kennedy aside. I go, Scott, the last thing I need in my life is an angry Marine. So I go, we got to do a show for these guys. And the sergeant at the base that was leading us around goes, all right, but your plane's coming. You in like 35 minutes, it's got to be a 15-minute show. And I said, done. So we did a show for these 12 Marines, 10 men, 2 women in a little, their little TV room, which was a smaller room than the big room we were just in. No microphone, myself, Howie Knave, and Scott Kennedy. And we each did 5 minutes. And my goal was to make that kid laugh. And we did. And then we pile into these Humvees and we're driving. They're driving us out to the landing zone. And they're all just like, that show was awesome. And like, we're in a Humvee, which is really tight. There's 4 seats. And then a guy standing in the middle, because he's up top with a machine gun turret at the top. So he's like looking down at me, like past his legs, going, dude, that show was great, while he's holding this like 30 caliber machine gun or whatever. And you know, this woman was the sergeant. She was in charge of this unit. And she was like, oh, that was a cool show. And she's cleaning her nails with the most vicious knife you've ever seen. And then she's like, whatever the guy's name, she's like, we get there. And all of a sudden she's talking, and she stops and gets on her headset. And she's like, all right, Johnson, pop smoke. This guy pops a smoke grenade. And then an Osprey, which is this crazy Marine Corps. It's like a Terminator thing. It's like a fixed wing airplane with props, but the props can then turn, vertical, and it can land like a helicopter. So it can fly like a rotary plane and then stop and go up and down like a helicopter. So, because we're at this little base that didn't have a runway, and it So all of a sudden, this crazy thing lands. It's all loud. Ah, they're like, hey, man, thank God, thank you. We get on it because it's like the back, a ramp folds down. We get on the thing. They keep the ramp down because they had a machine gun on the back. That was sort of how they defended it. And then we start to fly away. And this base, you're just looking at it in this basically like a frame of the back of the Osprey with the ramp down. It's like a drive-in movie theater or something. You're just watching this as the base gets smaller and smaller. And that's the last we ever saw those people. And it was right near the Jordan border. And that I tell that story for several reasons, just to show you what it was like being over there and to let you know what Scott Kennedy was all about. Because he was about, let's do as many shows as you can. Because he told me once when we had done a show and a couple soldiers, we couldn't do this one base because they had gotten an attack the night before and some people had died. And so we had to go to different bases. And I was all like distraught. I was like, I can't believe this. You know, these guys are in a war zone. I just feel like a clown. I'm just running around telling these jokes. He goes, Graham, a commanding officer told me that when comedy shows come through bases, the suicide rate drops. So we're saving lives. So anywhere he could do a show, I did a bunch of shows like that. We just did these impromptu shows in front of 15 soldiers or whatever, just sitting there with nothing to do. So that's my story.
All right. Like that vision, you know, going away in that Osprey. It sounds like a movie.
It is a movie shot. It is the final shot of a film where you're like flying away and you see the thing in the distance.
Because the picture is framed
and
you're
moving off.
And I
thought you were going to say that a firefight broke out as you were pulling away.
Honest, please. You watch too many movies.
That's not outlandish, though.
That would be the end of the movie. Well, that didn't happen. But in the movie, there'd be like, you know, it'd be fine. You'd be like, I can't leave you. And the guy turn around, he'd turn, you go, make him laugh or something.
And then it'd be a like fire.
And Robert Downey Jr. would come out of the Humvee in an Iron Man. But
I don't think I've ever heard of that Osprey. Is that just a
military
thing?
Yeah.
It's a Marine. It's an aircraft specifically used for the Marine Corps.
Right. And so Scott Kennedy going over there over 50 times, it's like he was part of the armed services.
Scott was an amazing dude. His whole thing was we had both gone to Afghanistan through this comic by the name of Mike Burton, who set up some tours to Afghanistan in like 04 and 06 and 07. And then Scott did some, you know, did through like Armed Forces Entertainment and did through the USO. The USO, which is a great organization, it's a non-for-profit organization. Go to uso.org. They don't send entertainers to the real small bases because it's been very dangerous.
And so you just go to the bigger places where there's thousands of...
And those people deserve a show too. I'm not saying they don't deserve it. But Scott, the Mike Burton tours in Afghanistan, we went to these small bases and Scott realized how important those shows were because the small bases, they'd be like, well, I've been at this base for 10 months. We've had zero entertainment. You know, like they had nothing at those small bases.
It's almost like being a part of the greater good, right? Because there's the people that are fighting. Then there's the people that are cooking for the people that fight. And then there's the people that are, you know, I remember having a friend of mine who was a traffic cop in the Air Force. That's what his job was. He was a traffic cop. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always thought, you know, if you're in the military, you carry a gun and you do the, no, he was a traffic cop. So there's all these
That's
different divisions.
Because I love World War II movies. And it's like, there's always like the guy, or I've heard this in real life too. It's like if a man could type, he became the general secretary.
Right.
You know,
right,
like these guys, there's always a guy typing on an old Underwood.
In the Air Force or in the Marine, you know, it's not like there's any less of the community. And that's kind of like being a comedian and going over there. You're part of the community. You are the clown.
It was, you know, I've been over there a total of 7 times. And like what Scott was doing, he got how important it was. He made these little coins because they give you coins like you do a show and the company commander comes up and gives you like the unit coin. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. They call it getting coined. They put it in their handshake. And Scott said to me once, he goes, you know, Graham, he had a nephew who was a Marine who was in the initial invasion in 2003. And he goes, my nephew was in the initial invasion. He slept under Humvees. The best shower he got was like baby wipes in the initial invasion, and he never got one coin, and I have a bunch of them.
So, yeah, can you get many? You can get as many as...
I have stacks of them, and they're all amazing, and they're all an honor. But you can be in the military for 20 years and get one, maybe two.
How many do you have? 10, 20, 50? 100.
I don't know offhand. Probably 25.
That's really wonderful.
And Scott's probably got 100 or so. So what Scott did, though, is he made his own coin because he created his own tour called Comics Ready to Entertain. And he put Comics Ready to Entertain and Scott Kennedy on one side, and on the back it said Hero.
Good for him.
And he would find these soldiers because after shows they'd hang out. You could say when a kid was having like a tough time, they'd start talking to us because they felt safe talking to us, right? Because we're not in the military.
Well, also,
we're not,
you have just come over from the States, right? And we just came part from of the States. Like America, right?
Yeah, and we just gave them a show and they would start confiding a lot of stuff. Like, I've heard a lot of really intense stories. And so Scott started giving coins to these guys.
That is so kind.
Out of his own pocket.
Wow.
Didn't sell them on his website or anything like that. Mm. Only made them for people who were deployed.
That is so kind. Was his face on it, or just
his name?
Just his name. Because my friends and I used to have a joke about who you would sleep with, you know. And I once said I'd sleep with anybody on a coin or a bill. I mean, just because, you know, I think that'd be an experience.
Sure. And even if it's Susan B. Anthony.
Whatever.
Like, hey, she was probably a lesbian and had some skills. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the Sacagawea. I'm not going to turn my back.
You're saying you feel like you're a clown. These people are out there, and I understand that.
I said clown.
Like,
he didn't say that.
No, he did.
In that one,
in that derogatory way, like
in that one moment.
In that moment, no, I understand that. But it's also like when you tell that story, as we sit here yesterday, I was at a comedy club. And I'm like, okay. Maybe I'm not doing everything with comedy I possibly could since you're over there entertaining people who are fighting for our freedom. Maybe I should, you know.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, like you said, there was already a drawdown in Afghanistan, and now there's going to be like, they're going to bring back about half of the troops within a year.
Well, they pulled out the last people out of Iraq in December of 2011. Obama has committed to pulling everybody out of Afghanistan in December of 2014. So,
but within a year from now,
within
even
a year
just
from
like
now,
next spring, half of us are
going to
be back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then, where are you going to go? Who are you going to entertain next?
I say North Korea.
Talk about a captive audience.
Come on, yeah. Iran.
Now, I mean, you do cruise ships, you do all sorts of things, but do you want to do more of the kind of a global feeling, the volunteering, the kind? Well, you want volunteering.
Those shows for the military, I'll do them whenever there's an opportunity to do them.
So you're saying, Hannes, the USO is here in the States and that they do the shows here.
I don't, well, USO
they do shows.
Doesn't, yeah, they do shows, I'm sure. The USO also does other things. I think if you walk into a USO, it's not like there's a show going on every night. Well, like, usually it's like a friendly place. It's a place
what,
you get
what you should
about
know,
the city you happen to be in or something like that.
The shows are only about 30% of what the USO does. A big part of what they do is help. Like, if a soldier is deployed wherever, Afghanistan,
right.
Germany, wherever, and there's like a family emergency or something and they have to get home immediately, the USO helps them travel because a lot of them, the military just goes, okay, here are your orders.
And you're gone, right. And the USO comes in and helps, like
helps
lends
you get,
a,
right,
a lend, helping
you,
yeah. hand.
Help you get home. And that's why they have like 150 some or 160 some USO centers all over the world.
Yeah.
And that any soldier traveling or anyone in the military traveling can get help through the USO and all kinds of stuff. So the entertainment is what they're known for, but it's only a third of what they really do.
Right.
And
well,
they need,
Bob
and they need
made
to,
it. Bob Hope made it so
sure.
popular, the USO. So then when we hear that, we think of you. We think Bob Hope. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been overseas and you just for a second, play war in your head and like run for the helicopter? Or, you know what I mean? Do you ever like they think like pretend like somebody's chasing me or I'm gonna, you know, I could get like put in a
it
hole
sound
or
like you had
cage.
To pretend, really?
No, it's pretty intense. It's kind of there's not. You don't have to really pretend.
You
it's,
don't have to pretend. Yeah,
it's pretty serious. Like you're wearing body armor. I was on a helicopter in Afghanistan in 2006 that came under fire. I've had rocket attacks in Iraq.
You said the one time you were in and that girl threw the smoke thing out.
Yeah. It's no nonsense. I mean,
right.
you're in a war zone. Like
right.
it's, so there's no like, you know, so there's times when you go, wow, this is kind of cool. Sometimes you're flying in a Black Hawk at night or whatever. And it's like, this is awesome. But then
right.
you're like, and for real, like, you know, we were in a guard tower that looked out at the Iranian border, you know, and we're sort of joking like, ha ha, you know, I'm going to cause an international incident. And you're like, and then I stopped for a second, you know, and everyone laughed. And I thought, I really could cause an international
okay.
incident.
Okay, but that's what I was thinking. Like, you know, every once in a while, I would be kind of like, you know, you would kind of pretend like you're on TV or in the movies until you realize.
Well, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, you're going over there as an entertainer.
Right.
And this is part of what, like, Scott was a big thing, was we were always sort of trying to be on. I mean, not in the annoying way. But like, yeah. they...
Because yeah. it sounds annoying.
Yeah. So he goes out there and they're like, it's not worth it, man. I'm running out into the field. I'm running out in the minefield. This guy won't shut up.
Shut up. I don't care about your palm strikes.
Yes, put away the props, Carrot Top. I can't take it.
All right. Let's switch gears. Let me ask you about your palm strike party. This is like your own little thing.
Palm strike dance party.
You travel a lot in the States. You do a lot of comedy around the country. And people know you. I mean, you are well known as a traveling comedian. And people come to your shows. They buy your CDs. They go to your website. They do all this stuff. And then you start Palm Strike Dance Party. And so now people are palm striking you.
It's been a fun thing. It started when I started studying martial arts, like, I don't know, 7-8 years ago.
That's it.
And I was a yellow belt, and they gave me a second black stripe on my yellow belt. And I was performing at the Improv in Hollywood, and a couple of my instructors were in the audience. So I jokingly said on stage, I'm a second degree yellow belt.
I see.
And started doing that palm strike, and it just sort of caught on. And then when I started going back on the road about 5 years ago, then I turned it into this whole thing.
Yeah. I never put that together.
Yeah.
I feel like such an idiot. I did martial arts, but I never put that together.
And then so I started doing all this palm strike stuff, and the fans
just loved
it. I
totally got that immediately.
All right, let me ask you something. Now, I have to ask you, you are in your 40s. You're in your 40s.
Not in Hollywood.
I'm in my 40s.
I'm early 30s in Hollywood.
So we are what
I'm
we are.
I'm in 30s. No, I'm in my 40s.
I weigh 160 pounds in Hollywood.
But you're single. You have no children, right?
No children.
So
that I knew of.
When you're single now, I mean, it's... What is the dating like? Because do you go online? Do you do the match.com? And I'm only asking because I am now single. And I find in my 40s, the problem is that guys like you, also in your 40s, perhaps close to my age, you guys date the women in their 20s. And then I say to myself, you know, when I was 28, I dated a guy 44 and another guy 45. You know what I mean? So I did that.
Yeah.
And now I'm in my 40s.
Now you're paying
the
price.
Well, I think
that guy's 68 years old.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think to myself now, like, thank God I wasn't with him because he'd be close to 70 and fuck me. You know what I mean? Now, my ex-husband, the one...
Only with 24 hours notice to get the pills.
My ex-husband is 8 years younger. So then in my head, I think like, well, I'm going to go younger because I already went young, you know, like he was younger and I have a younger spirit. But that's not the way it works. Graham Elwood, your thoughts.
Hot seat. Graham Elwood on the dating hot seat. You know, the dating situation has been, you know, traveling makes it hard.
Right.
Because, you know, I've met some people traveling and you know, I've met some cool people and it's hard. I live in another city and I'm traveling all over the place and I've been trying to meet people here in LA. And I have done the dating website thing.
Which one?
I'm not
Christian
saying,
Mingle?
Yeah, Christian Mingle. I'm on Christian Mingle.
I like that farmer dating thing. Yeah. The farmer only. Have you seen the commercials for that?
Yes, I do farmers only.
Yes. And, it's farmers only. City folk don't get it. That's their slogan.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding about any of this.
He's dead serious.
That's amazing.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
And I've done that and that's been okay. But then the problem with that is, and I've met some amazing women.
Right.
You know, in their mid to late 30s who are... got jobs and good, you know, advanced degrees and it's cool. The tough thing is then they're like, well, I want something serious and I want to settle down and you're gone every weekend.
And also the biological clock is ticking.
That's a real thing.
And that's a huge thing.
That's why I have dated women in their 20s is because it's like, they're not going to be bugging me for children.
Right, right.
I've dated single moms.
Right. Single moms would be a good way to go. Listen to me, as a single mom.
Yeah, single moms would be a good way to go. Especially if their spirit is young.
Young, if they have a young spirit.
A young spirit. You know what guys never look for in a dating profile at Match.com? Young spirit.
And that, and also good at math. They don't really care.
Good at math,
surprisingly, men don't care.
Yeah.
The good news is I'm not good at math.
Well,
or is that bad news?
No, it's just, you're a woman. Of course you're not good at math. Duh.
But it's true. A lot of women.
Now knit me something.
If you don't, go make me a sandwich. If you don't want children... It is a good idea to get involved with somebody who also perhaps already has a child or doesn't want more
and
doesn't
care for that child because if they like them, then they're going to want another one.
That's in trouble.
No, I don't think that's, I'm just saying, like, the kids thing, it's a big thing.
It, you know, it's a thing, and I like...
I this thought, is where oh, the cats come in handy.
It would be though. Nice to have kids or whatever, but right now, I don't know, man. Like,
isn't it funny
know.
Though, in your 40s, though, do you feel like, I mean, for me anyway, like when I was in my 20s, it was like going to different concerts and bands, and I followed sports. And it was like really, all those things were important. And now, like, I don't care if I never hear another sports score in my life. And bands, I still go to a lot of concerts and stuff, but
don't
it doesn't
put that in your dating profile, by the way.
No, it's just sort of, yeah, it's not, oh my God, this is so important. It's sort of like, well, this is cool.
Right. As in my 40s, yeah, I'm sort of mellowing in that respect. Because
I
you
follow
see,
sports.
You see time go by and you see it. I mean, it matters for a second and then it doesn't matter anymore.
Well, you realize what's important, you know, and it's just, to me, it's like, I used to be so, when I was in my early 20s, I lived in Chicago and I followed every team and I was like so into it and I'd get all mad at the TV. And now it's like, there's so many sports I don't even follow anymore.
Right.
And to me, it's more like, and I think this is when, you know, learning what's important. What's important to me is the people I spend time with and doing things I like and being with people I like. So it's like, if I'm going to watch a game, it's because me and my buddies are going to get together. And it's more about that.
Now, ironically, I understand that in terms of talk radio, the only thing that really sells anymore is sports. Like sports radio
really...
Well,
and
really
sports is also on television the only...
Thing that people
really,
don't DVR.
The only thing that people...
Interesting.
Yeah, people have to watch sports and want to watch sports live.
Live.
And therefore, they have to sit through the commercials.
And
it's the only thing on television that can't be delayed.
And then there's a lot to argue about with sports, but nobody's really right or wrong. So in terms of like talk radio and sports radio, these guys get on the air and just start spewing shit back and forth. That's
right,
so
and
heated.
I listen to sports
heated.
Radio only because I don't want to listen to the same 85 songs, so I like to listen to talk radio. And we used to have a station here in LA that had Howard Stern and Heidi Frosty Frank and these other people, and it was basically a comedy station. I mean, they would talk and mostly it was funny. I was like, this is what I want to listen to. When that one left, I had to listen to talk. The only I can't listen to political
have you heard
bullshit
of the podcast, Hannes?
No, I'm saying the podcast. What I'm
this
saying
a
is
new technology.
It's gone away. No, all that stuff has gone to the podcast. Right. Now it's either extreme politics, usually on the right, but sometimes on the left, or sports. That's all that's left in radio of people talking.
Sure.
People screaming about things.
And
yeah,
I think
and
that's what
like,
has driven a lot of people to podcasting.
Yeah, because nobody talks about anything
normal
on the radio.
People just want entertainment sometimes. They don't want to be shoved things down their throat.
And I want to get back to the dating thing, too.
Don't put that in your dating profile.
Let me shove
either.
This into your throat. I want to shove my podcast into your throat.
Well, that's the other thing real quick about the dating, though, is so if you say my name's Graham Elwood, and then they Google you, and then bam, you are completely exposed.
It's a weird thing. I especially like, you know, when I did the online dating, and they're just like, oh, you know, I say like I work in entertainment, and then I say, well, this is actually what I do, and they're like, oh, that's cool. And I remember one girl just started being like, and I could see in her face, in her eyes, she was like, is this some guy that's like an open mind, like give up the dream, dummy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and she even said something to that effect, like, well, you know, don't you at some point you need to settle down and get a real. And I was like, you need to understand something. I go, this is who I am.
Yeah,
I go,
she's not for you.
Comedy is not a profession; it's a calling. Yeah. That's the other thing, is being a comedian.
Yeah.
It's hard because all my friends are the funniest people working today.
Mm-hmm.
So to hang out with someone.
You're sweet. Thank you.
You're gorgeous.
go ahead.
You know what I mean? Like everyone is a professional entertainer. Most of my friends are. So when I'm dating someone, like, and it's not like they need to be as funny as a comic.
Right.
But they need to get it.
Yeah, pick up the game. Right.
Yeah,
pick
they
up
need
your game.
To get that.
I understand.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, I it's like I you know, yeah, I realized that, like, yeah, it's a calling, and it's nobody, it's kind of, come to think of it, it's kind of like you know, being gay. It's like, it's not a choice.
No,
it's
it is
genetic.
Always,
you
always
are,
says if somebody can talk you out of being an entertainer,
right,
then you aren't going to
be
an entertainer.
Yeah, somebody says, should I try stand-up comedy? I will say no, because if me saying no is enough, then you shouldn't fucking do stand-up comedy.
I never asked anybody,
yeah, you
should
have
I
to,
do this? Right. I just did it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Nobody who was supposed to do it
what
ever
do you think?
Asked
should
anybody.
I take a class in comedy? No.
Okay, so
go.
So if you're dating then, do you, like, my girlfriend goes on online dating and she uses the code Nancy Drew. She goes by Nancy Drew. So maybe you could be like Johnny Quest, or like, can't you just, do you have to say I'm Graham Elwood? I mean, because that does give away everything, doesn't it?
Well,
online dating.
I don't know. It's. I think
perhaps you could go by the name Penis von Skirmerhorn.
Well, I think in dating in LA, like, I don't think I'm not really that famous in Los Angeles. So I think, I don't know. I think.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It doesn't matter. In other words, they're going to get it if they're in L.A.
Right.
I would think.
They're either. And like in L.A., there's famous people everywhere.
Okay. So I'm not going to come up with a pseudonym.
With all due respect, knowing someone who is successful in show business in Los Angeles is not that impressive.
Right. It's not.
It's like, you work at comedy clubs 300 weeks a year industry. And you have this and this. Yeah. Okay. My uncle is Steven Spielberg. Right. You know, it's like, it's not.
Well, it doesn't even have to be Steven Spielberg. It's just my best friend writes for this sitcom. Right. Or my other buddy.
He's a camera assist or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Everyone works in the business.
It's a company town.
Yeah, all right. It's a company town. So, to make people that get it, and then like, you know, fans, that can be difficult sometimes because then they're like, they put you up on this pedestal.
No, I get
whatever.
It. Make me laugh. Right.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah. Right. They want me to be like this court jester for them or whatever.
All right. Let me ask you this. Comedy Film Nerds. That's your podcast with Chris Mancini. And how's that going?
It's going great. You know?
And do you go to movies for free? You get to pay for them.
We get some for free. We go to, we get some press screenings. We're getting a lot of independent films that are, the indie films love us and they want us to get press screenings. The big films haven't quite acknowledged us yet as a viable entity, although our book, The Comedy Film Nerd Guide to Movies, available at comedyfilmnerds.com.
You can probably buy it on Amazon through our website.
That sort of helped set us apart.
Right.
And the podcast festivals obviously helped set us apart. And so we're kind of in this, Comedy Film Nerds and my comedy career are sort of similar in that we're not household names.
Right.
But we're not no names. We're sort of in this middle.
No. You're definitely above the pack. Comedy Film Nerds is definitely above the chaff.
Well, there's like categories. There's world famous, and then there's known.
Yeah, we're
and
known.
And you are known.
We're known. We're not like Mark
Maron. Every person in the world doesn't know you, but a lot of people and people that are important to you know you.
Right, and that's good. And so we're very happy with that. We've made, you know, we're very happy with where the site's going. It's making money. We're not, Chris and I aren't drawing big paychecks yet, but we just joined All Things Comedy, and they just got us a new sponsor, TiVo, which is great.
Oh, that's really good.
And TiVo's awesome now.
All Things Comedy, that's great.
That's a great network.
And so where do you think podcasts is going? In other words, do you think all the shows are going to be streaming live? Not just streaming, I don't mean to say streaming live, I mean live camera, video. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think podcasting, I don't know that it's that all podcasts are going to go in one specific direction. I think because of the technology and everything is changing, I think some are going to gravitate to that. Some are going to be, it sort of depends on the focus and tone of the show, I think.
Yeah,
and also
think,
where the technology goes.
I know that people, you know, people have said they're like, oh, it'll all be video, but it's like most of it.
I love listening.
Is anyone really missing anything listening now because they can't see it?
Here's why.
My pants are undone.
Well, your pants are off. That's
right.
The first thing.
Right.
It's gorgeous. Here's why it's not all going to go to video, because radio was so important, but podcasting has usurped it.
Yeah. And people thought radio would disappear.
But radio's only really big in drive time anymore anyway, right?
But here's the thing. The number one types of people that come up to me on the road, the number one podcast fans are people that have a long commute or a job where they just, I have some people come to me, man, I have this job where
I work. So I listen in my earbud all day long. Right.
That's
how I listen to all my shows. I listen all day.
So video.
Right. Wouldn't help me.
Doesn't help them at all.
Right. I don't have time to look. I just have time to listen.
It's past the time.
It's past the time.
It's funny I've like seen so many talk shows, you know, The Tonight Show, David Letterman, all that. It's like now I have it on the background. I'm not looking at it. I don't have to watch David Letterman talk to Martin Short in a desk. I don't have to see that. There's really almost no reason for that to be on video.
You're the only person I know watching David Letterman. I'll be honest with you.
I think what's going
to
happen.
Somebody's got to. There's a few of us left. I have one thing before we do that.
Okay.
I was just going to say, I think what's going to happen is certain shows are going to go to YouTube. And I think YouTube is now setting itself up to be more of an entertainment, like the cat falling in the pudding video type thing. It's YouTube is realizing it's every time. It's
hilarious.
Because I think YouTube, the advertisers have now come to YouTube, and they're bringing entertainers and entertainment channels to YouTube. So I think, like, we, for instance, you know, have been talking, throwing around a Comedy Film Nerds type TV show, like a talk show type thing. And we're already, Chris and I are already talking like, well, if we can't get a network to buy it, let's just put it on YouTube.
And have it anyway, right?
And have it, but it would be separate from the podcast because the podcast is a very specific thing for the listener that needs to fill all those hours.
You know, like Jim Rome has a radio show.
Right.
And he has a television show.
All the ESPN guys have their own radio shows.
And, yeah, and they're all different.
Yeah.
They're all separate.
Hello, Hannes, we have a podcast and then we have a game show.
Boom.
Would you like to play a little Shotgun Story with
Let's do it.
Can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy,
the game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true 1-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel.
All right, my category is prom. My senior prom, I took my dad's Buick, because it was a nice car. My mom had a 78 Ford Fairmont station wagon, 3-speed stick shift, could not take that to the prom. Went to the prom with a girl that was a year younger than me. I wish. And I went to high school in Evanston, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. We went downtown for the prom. Was at this big swanky hotel downtown. Went to a fancy dinner. All this stuff. Came back. Someone had broken into my dad's Buick, and I was like, "Oh my God!" It was a Buick Century. It was a gorgeous car, and that kind of killed the whole night. And then I just got a goodbye kiss from this girl, and she was a virgin. And was like, oh, I can't do that. Was all nervous and all this stuff like that. Then the next day I told my dad, I thought he was going to go through the roof. He was just like, hmm, it's weird. Didn't get mad at all. So I didn't get any play during prom. I was already kind of starting to fall for a girl that was dating, had a serious relationship with a guy. But then we started secretly making out behind everyone's back. So that was the other girl. And then I found out, then I graduated. So I was a freshman in college. The girl I went to prom with, I guess, got pregnant or something like that.
Four.
I was like, man, how come I didn't get to take her virginity?
Yes.
That's because somebody broke into your dad's Buick. Hey, listen, I remember making out with Matt Hackworth in the woodshop room where we changed into our like woodshop robes. You know what I mean?
Oh, nothing sexier than smell of sawdust. By the way, this leads right into what I have to say, which we did not realize until just before this program. You were born in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes, my dad was a professor at the UW-Madison. He was a theater professor. He was chairman of the theater department.
Yeah, you have hippie parents.
I have hippie
and
parents.
And I went to the University of Wisconsin, as did Evan Gore, who I've known since.
Evan was a student of my dad.
And Jeff Kahn.
Oh, yeah, Jeff Kahn.
Who has also been on our show.
Husband.
And Alban, you're right. And it's like, so another, how we got past this Wisconsin is meant to be part of this podcast.
We
this is what I'm
had
saying.
Season tickets to Badger games when I was a kid.
Badger? Who are the Badgers?
Wisconsin Badgers.
Who are the Badgers?
When they were
Don't
horrible.
Put that in your dating profile. The Wisconsin Badgers, Big Ten.
You think I'm going to do well if I put
Rose
I love the Badgers?
Bowl.
You think I'm going to put I love the Badgers in my dating profile and that's going to get me somewhere?
You're going to get some nice Wisconsin boy.
Oh, that's exactly what I need.
Yeah, exactly.
Big, sturdy, husky.
Cheese for my birthday.
The Big Ten plays in the Rose Bowl, which is here in Los Angeles. And
I'm bored. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. Graham Elwood, thanks for coming back on
guys.
The show. We really appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
And we look forward to the LA Podfest in October.
October 4th through 6th, go to lapodfest.com. Last year we had 24 shows. This year we're probably going to have close to 40.
That's fantastic.
And the ticket price is the same, $100 for the whole weekend.
That's Woo-hoo! A lot of fun, man. A lot of fun.
And
you get to get up and
if you're
close
out
and personal.
Town, it's in Santa Monica, which is delightful.
It is delightful.
If you don't have to drive there at 5 in the afternoon.
It's four blocks from the beach. MailChimp is sponsoring a closing night party. So
oh,
there's
going to
be
awesome.
Food and free drinks and free food.
All
also,
the poop you can
but
throw.
You do,
Squarespace is sponsoring a lot of stuff.
That's fantastic.
It's
and you
awesome.
Do get to meet these podcasters and people. And there's big names. I mean, Todd Glass comes and Mark Maron's coming. And
yes. And one of the things we're doing different this year is we're having a
kissing booth.
We're having a kissing booth.
Can I be in it?
Yes.
However, he rejected my suggestion for the fucking shed.
Yeah. That's the city of Santa Monica turned it down. Don't kill the messenger.
Yeah, I know. Right. Sure, they can have homeless all over the streets, but but one fucking shed.
Here's what we are going to have. We are going to have a hand job hammock.
Oh,
but no, we are going to have what's called, and Squarespace is sponsoring this, a Squarespace Podfest Lab, where any smaller show that's not officially invited, there's going to be a cool little room like lounge with plenty of power outlets, and you can just come and bring your recording equipment and interview any of the big name comics.
If they come into your room.
You can schedule interviews
and
with them.
Ask them to come in.
Yes, because we had some smaller shows doing that, going around grabbing interviews, and we like, we should set a whole room aside.
That's a really great idea.
The two rooms we used for ticketing last year, we're putting ticketing out in the hallway and we're putting shows in those rooms. One's going to have regular scheduled shows, and then the other is going to be the lab sponsored by Squarespace.
Well, we are excited to be there.
You guys are going to be awesome.
Indeed. It will be great. A story Thank worthy you very much. Festival.
Yes. It will be story
Indeed.
Worthy.
Indeed. All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I'd like to thank Jorge Reyes. He's our sound engineer. Helps us out every darn week.
He is also story worthy.
We'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. He does the music here on the show, Hannes. I don't know if you know him.
No, I have no idea who he is.
I'd also like to thank our storyteller tonight, Graham Elwood. Thank you, Graham Elwood.
Thank you, guys.
And of course, on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Story Worthy on iTunes and visit the Story Worthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.